Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Susanna, and welcome to the Codeco podcast. In this podcast, we'll keep you up to date with the latest app development tech talk. Now, here's the show.
This is the Codeco podcast. This episode was recorded on Sunday, the 25th of February, 2024. And I am your host, Drew Freeman. And I am here, as always, with one of my wonderful co-hosts, Jennifer Bailey.
Thanks, Drew. Today on the show, we have Alex Sullivan and Philippe Bavic. Alex has been a mobile developer for over 10 years and has gotten his hands dirty in every part of the mobile stack, from native Android and iOS to React Native and Flutter. He's been freelancing since the pandemic and is currently working on a contract at Google. He's also a previous season co-host. Philippe has been an Android engineer for 9 years, doing everything from agency work, client-based projects, development, open source libraries, to content and presentations. Most recently, for the last 3 to 4 years, he's focused intently on people management, specifically leadership and coaching. He's been leading teams and helping them grow, participating in process development, individual growth, and soft skills mentorship.
Well, both of you, thank you, folks. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
It's good to have you both here. We are going to be talking about moving from traditional XML, or at least as traditional as XML gets, into Jetpack Compose. And I'm going to start. I, as I've told people on the show, I have a little bit of a script to help me guide my thoughts and my process along the way. But I want to ask both of you how you found yourself in Android programming and where you consider yourself on that journey. And Philippe, let's start with you.
Yeah, sure. So mine started about 9 years ago, as Jen mentioned. By random chance, I ended up being an intern at this local agency. And I kind of saw it as an opportunity to learn a lot, to, you know, see where I can go with Android development, because I didn't really know what I want to do at the time. I was still fresh in college and everything was, you know, exciting, but also very, very difficult to learn. So giving me an opportunity to do Android at the company was really, really nice and just kind of started my career. And I realized, you know, there's a lot of people who are looking to start their career as well. And I can do a lot with mentoring, I can do a lot with teaching. So I did a lot of presentations and things like that. And yeah, several years later, I'm still doing all of that.
Alex, how about you?
Sure, yeah. So it's interesting. It's kind of a similar start. I had a co-op, which I did through the school I went to, Northeastern University. And I did some light mobile development on that co-op and said, hey, I really like writing a thing and seeing it on my phone. Then I did another internship at a company called Runkeeper and kind of went all in on mobile development. And I was doing iOS and Android and kind of jumping back and forth. At some point, there was a big need for more Android expertise at the company I was at, and I kind of just decided to go for it and have been following that path ever since. Yeah. And I said 10 years just to one up Philippe by 1 year. That was the goal there.
Are you both using Jetpack Compose at this point, or are you still doing traditional XML?
Yeah, sure. So from my side, it's a bit of both. I do use it for my personal projects and have been using it on certain occasions. But I went from using exclusively Compose at a company where I was building an SDK towards using exclusively XML because it was a legacy application. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in a similar boat where all of my personal projects have been Compose for the last few years. I would never start a new project in XML anymore. But professionally, at Google at least, the team that I'm working with at Google, it's still all legacy XML, and there's no Compose in there yet.
All right. So what I'm getting is that it's one or the other. It's not really an intermix, is it? Now, Philippe, you're shaking your head back and forth. So
yeah, you can use both, and you can kind of combine it. There are some things which are very exclusively not available in Compose. So, for example, I've been recently doing some video previews and just general video stuff, you know, any kind of rendering of different tracks. All of that is not really supported natively in Compose, so you have to wrap it, you have to wrap XML and the view system into Compose. But alternatively, there's a lot of different things that you can do with Compose that you can do with XML. So sometimes just mixing both helps, or just, you know, kind of doing some of more complex UI elements in Compose, whereas taking some of the simpler ones in XML also makes sense.
So if you want to use Compose and you have an XML project, is this something that you can transition gracefully in, or is it sort of more of a complete use it and dump? Alex, let's start with you on that one.
Sure. You can definitely migrate gracefully. I mean, there's nothing that stops you from saying, hey, this new screen is going to be in Compose. You can just create a new fragment, one of the you know, building blocks within Android, and say, this is going to be a Compose fragment, and then you're fine. There's some stuff that you'll have to bridge the gap, and Philippe can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think on the theming side, things along those lines, you're going to have to do a little bit of work to bridge, but not a huge amount of work. It's very easy to start dipping your toes in.
Yeah, on the theming side, XML has a very specific resource-based and also XML-based theming system. So, for example, if you're defining styles and themes that you apply to your usual components, you can't really directly apply those to Compose too, because Compose has its own wrapper around the UI theme and it has its own properties that you can use, own types, which you need to then apply to all of your components. So that, for example, is not very simple to interrupt. You generally have to build both and slowly migrate. But as Alex mentioned, any new screen, you can choose what you want to pick, and you can even pick smaller parts of a screen to embed within the existing application.
Okay, so yeah, I'm glad you added that at the end there, because I was getting the impression that each screen had to make that decision that you wanted to go, this screen will be Jetpack Compose, therefore all the components on it will be Jetpack Compose. But you're saying that I could actually have a screen that's Jetpack and use a couple of XML components, or I'm assuming vice versa, I can have an XML screen and have a couple of Jetpack components.
Basically, you can do that, yes. If you have XML definitions, you can embed a Compose view within, and then in runtime, based on your, you know, UI state, based on the data that you have, you can apply different UI to that Compose container. And similarly, as you mentioned, if you have a lot of Jetpack Compose UI, if there's something you just cannot fill with Compose, you can, or you have an existing component, you can just add and embed an Android view within Compose. And it more or less works for the most part.
And so you have to have a separate theme, though. So if you're adding in Jetpack Compose components, you have to mirror the theme.
Yeah. Compose has a material default. It kind of strongly emphasizes the material UI design system. So The components themselves have something predefined by default, which you can override. But it's also suggested that if you vary a lot from this, you can build your own theme, which is pretty cool. And then you can simply apply it to all of your components in the tree. So it's not something that comes out of the box, let's say, if you're building a custom theme, obviously. But once you do it, you can just apply it everywhere. So it's pretty simple.
Then if you build that custom theme in Jetpack Compose and you go to your XML views, then you also need to mirror whatever you've done in the traditional XML structure, yeah, which is probably the most painful piece of interspersing.
Yeah, I think you both have answered my next question, which is, if you have the preference, which would you choose? And you've both said that, well, all my personal projects, I start in Jetpack Compose. And so help me understand the difference between them and why Jetpack Compose is the choice of engineers now.
9 out of 10 engineers. Sure, yeah, I can speak for myself at the very least. There's a few different reasons why I always start new projects in Compose. One is it's new and cool, and that's always fun. It's definitely the future of UI development in Android, so any chance I have to practice it, I'll do. And then the reason why it's cool and the reason why it's the future is because it just embraces a much more modern way of creating UI. So like the web world went into React land and declarative UI, you know, a decade plus ago. You've had Flutter doing declarative UI, this same sort of style of writing UI in code and having it automatically re-render depending on changes. React Native does the same thing. You have Swift UI doing it on the iOS side. And it's just clearly the modern way to create UI now. It comes with a bunch of benefits. You have a lot, you spend a lot less time manually updating little bits of your UI or worrying about your UI not updating when it should. And that kind of just implicitly comes with the way that you create UI in Jetpack Compose. So it kind of solves a whole class of problems. It kind of introduces some other problems, but it's just a very modern way of doing things. They also, I think, one of the benefits that aren't spoken as much is, that's a benefit and a curse. It also represents a chance to redo kind of the standard UI from Google's standpoint. So they can say, hey, we made all of these mistakes, as anyone does, with this classic UI system, and we're going to try to not make those same mistakes and go with a slightly more modern approach. The downside being that I'm sure other mistakes will crop up that they wouldn't have expected, but it's kind of a chance to start again.
Yeah, I mean, the UI toolkit we used before, which is Views, is, you know, 10 plus years old. So obviously, in the early days, there were very simple UIs. There were very simple pieces of functionality that an Android app could do, or any app in general. And at the time when it was built with very big limitations. So there were hardware limitations for one. There were software limitations as well. And they had to do a lot of optimizations that are under the hood, which then resulted in maybe poor code or something that's not really maintainable, something that's not really scalable, right? So now with Compose, as Alex mentioned, we get a clean slate. We can build something new. We can build something that's cool, but also works and functions and utilizes pretty much everything that we have in the current software and hardware. So that's a pretty, pretty big plus.
One thing that I think is interesting to look at is, like, what is the current size of the text view class? I think it's tens of thousands of lines long, and it's a good example of, like, how much has just pushed into these components. That's the old text view class in XML world.
Yeah, yeah.
And what are the most exciting improvements? One thing that comes to mind is recycler view.
Yeah, anything in terms of dynamic data, dynamic UI, it's just so simple to build now. And one thing that might be sometimes overlooked is that for some of these things in XML, you used to have 3, 4, maybe even more files. Or you had like one really big file that had everything in it, which, you know, neither option is good in terms of readability, in terms of scalability. But in Compose, everything is Kotlin, for one. Everything is very simple in terms of the styling, in terms of the syntax. You can split all of this into multiple smaller files if you want to, or like just top-level functions, things like that, if you want to decouple the UI. And even with like the simplicity that it has, it's still able to build very complex components, like a dynamic list. You know, it's only a few lines of code, essentially, and not 4 files that you have to build together, and also files in XML and files in Android code, which is either Kotlin or Java, and then kind of combining it together. So that's very, very cool. And on top of that, you know, another thing that Alex mentioned, it's very easy to update that UI. So in recycler views, they had to do a lot of different things under the hood to make its performance, you know, performance-wise very good, very optimized. With Compose, it comes with the system itself, you know, the way that the recomposition is built. And you can do a lot of different things that in recycler views, you have to kind of build custom components like extra loading spinners, headers, footers, all of that comes within the component itself. So they solved a lot of big problems and made them super simple so everyone can just kind of jump into development now.
One thing that Philippe touched on that I think is a huge win is like back when we were making UI in XML and then, you know, inflating it and using it in Java or Kotlin or whatever, there started to be this issue of, I kind of want to put some logic into the XML, and they created ways to do that, whether it's data binding or I'm blanking on the other. Maybe that was just within data binding. But it always ends up in a world where you're trying to make XML something that it's not, or you're suffering the limitations of XML, and both end up being bad. I think it's one of the reasons why data binding didn't really take off. And so having it all in one place offers a lot of simplicity in both how you're building it and then a lot of power in how you're customizing your UI, how you're choosing which UI to use and things along those lines. I think it's a big win.
So for somebody new to a reactive framework, how do you explain to someone new that concept of state?
I mean, we had state before as well, but instead of it being a, you know, function which is called render UI or something like that, where you just set all the properties on the UI programmatically, you just look at it in the way that if there is some state, then I call a specific function. I call a function that renders some UI. If the state isn't there, then I don't call it. So a lot of the things that we had to do in XML, such as hiding views, you know, putting them to gone visibility or to put them visible, or, you know, changing their fonts, their text, all of that. A lot of that was business logic, which Alex mentioned. It's hard to do. You can't really do it through XML. Some of it you can. But if you try to do it, it's very complex. Here, if you, for example, if you haven't reached the bottom of the list, you don't show a loading spinner. If you see that you're rendering the last item in the list, for example, the last visible item, then you show a loading spinner to show pagination. So it's kind of a, yeah, it's a big perspective shift if you haven't done anything like this before. But at the same time, if you approach it from like a natural user perspective, you know, if I scroll to the bottom, I want to see a loading spinner to know that there's more items. You can put those words into code more or less and they will work.
Yeah, and I think one benefit that we have in the Android world is that a lot of the Android apps were already using reactive programming, and they were already kind of setting up the UI in such a way that it works the way you'd want it to work in a declarative framework. So people were already passing, you know, maybe a big state object from their view model to the fragment or the activity. Or they had a bunch of little, you know, live datas or flows. And so if you're already doing that, switching to Compose is really just changing how you're writing the view. The rest of your logic could theoretically stay exactly the same. Even your top level like function in your fragment that takes the state object could look exactly the same. For people who weren't following that paradigm and were doing a lot more imperative programming, I think at the end of the day, you can kind of just look at declarative UI and Jetpack Compose and whatnot as write the UI that you would want to write given some chunk of data. And then the framework handles the chunk of data changing. And that's all you need to do. And you're kind of good to go. So it actually removes a lot of complexity in your thinking, as long as you let it. If you try to hold on to the imperative ways, then it can become challenging. But I think it is fundamentally a simpler model of writing UI.
So as long as you're not stuck in an imperative world, the architecture of your program isn't really going to change very much.
Do we use different design patterns with Jetpack Compose? Because I know with XML, we used a lot of MVVM. Have we moved to a more different design pattern being more prevalent?
No, I mean, essentially, MVVM, as Alex mentioned, is or has been the way to go for years now, ever since all the Jetpack tools came out. Mainly the view model, not just because of the name, but the way that it implied, you know, lifecycle changes and ways for you to observe the data. Live data, so obviously flows from coroutines, all those things have been the standard toolkit or like some of the more used tools that we've been seeing in the last at least 3 or 4 years. So if you've been doing that, if you've been slowly migrating to some of the newer toys, as we can say, then Compose is just like one of those things, like a cherry on top. You can just say, okay, well, I can move from this being pretty good to pretty much the best solution that I can see at this point in time. And the shift wasn't too big. As you mentioned, Drew, like if you're stuck in imperative and you've not really been following the trends, then, yeah, your application might have a bit of an issue.
I have noticed, and I'm interested if you've seen any of these conversations, because this is more like on Twitter and or on X and in, you know, the woodwork. But I've started to hear some people moving away from using view models in Compose and kind of making the argument that they're no longer necessary. I haven't followed that thread too much, and I haven't done it in any of my personal apps, but Do you have any insight into that world?
I think that when there's something that's popular, there's always going to be people who are kind of against it.
Sure.
I think there were some discussions even like a few years ago where people were saying, yeah, you shouldn't be using view models at all. Like you can all do all of this with manual work and manual lifecycle, you know, checks and all of that instead of having like the system from Google. I personally don't really see a reason for that. I've actually been, let's say like 5 years ago or something like that, I've been to quite a few conferences where people have come up with their own UI systems. They hated the Vue toolkit, obviously. They were like, well, let's... And also they didn't like fragments, things like that. So they were like, okay, let's build our own system that's completely Vue-based. You know, we only have one activity and we just swap out views instead of fragments. Or, you know, let's go into this whole different direction where we try to do all of the rendering manually. And one of the things that I see that people don't understand is that, okay, that might solve your problem, but there's a huge maintenance cost. Like, if three people build this system, this whole new UI system for you, and it works great, you're going to run into an issue that you have to solve yourself, right? If you tackle the lifecycle in a super custom way, because you just didn't like the Android lifecycle at the time, and you don't like view models for some reason, then again, if something changes in Android, you have to maintain it. But for me, like view models come from Google, come with the Android lifecycle, and if something changes, then they adjust as well. So I don't really like following these trends. I kind of stick, I mean, let's say to the vanilla stuff, which is, okay, this is in the system. This is recommended by the people who made Android, who are developing it. And for me, it's worked so far. I didn't have any real big issues.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And especially, you know, if you use that, I guess this is maybe less relevant now that Compose is out, but if you use that little custom architecture package developed by these three brilliant engineers at X or at whatever company, not X the company, you're banking on that continuing to be maintained for the next 8 years that your product is going to be routed. There's a very good chance it's not going to be maintained. And if it stops being maintained, it's you and 5,000 other engineers trying to figure out what to do instead of you and hundreds of thousands of people that use, you know, the Android view model figuring out what to do. So yeah, I'm a big proponent of standard paths.
Always fork your third-party creations.
We'll be right back with more of our interview with Alex and Philippe in just a moment.
All right, so talk to me about how unit testing and testing in general changes looking in the XML world and then looking in the Jetpack Compose world. And Alex, I'm going to start with you because you just gave me the most wonderful
That was the face of, I haven't done a lot of Jetpack Compose UI testing. Not the face of, it's a bad story. I know that I've read that it's a better story. And that's not saying that much because the testing story for the old Vue system is a horrible story. So I think that it's a lot better now. I think that they took some pointers for Flutter, which has a good UI testing flow, but I think I've got to cede this one to Philippe.
I've not done too much UI testing myself. I do know a few things, and I think I've been to a talk or two where the speaker was discussing UI testing with Compose. I guess there's a few things. So like styling and theming and all of that. If you define an XML layout and you define some UI there and you apply themes through XML, then it means that at the time of rendering, so in your unit test or UI test, that theme is applied, right? But for Compose, it's a bit different. So when you're writing the UI test, you can actually write a test component that applies a specific theme, and then you just test that test component, right? So like you can test the base building block that you're using, or your base building block can expect some theming, some style, some sort of state even. Then in test, you can prepare the environment in a very specific state. I kind of do that through XML and, you know, different contexts, different activities and all of that, or applications, but it's much harder. Another small thing which kind of helps is that you don't, for some parts, you don't even have to write UI tests for Compose, because you can write preview objects or preview components, right? So if you're looking to see or test how your UI looks, if you have maybe different states or something like that, you can predefine components that render that test state. So as you're, you know, building a new component, you can write a small composable. That's the test component. You can provide it with some test state, and you can see the result immediately in your preview. You don't even have to run a test, right? Just build a project. So there are some like things like that which are super simple. I think the one of the things that's, or was at least, lacking from Compose UI testing like a year or two ago were tools, because it was new. And XML obviously had like 10 years of existence, and it had a bunch of tools. So some of those things were migrating, and we obviously need like a bit more support, a bit more tooling. But for the most part, as you said, like, I think it's a better story in general.
All right, so we've got testing out of the way. Let's talk about accessibility. Because I'm just going to keep throwing these things out there and see who panics first.
Can you share some specific examples of how Jetpack Compose either improves or makes accessibility more challenging to implement in an app?
One nice, this is just like a tiny little thing, but I think it's a big accessibility win, is that there are constructors for certain composables that require accessibility tags. So like the image constructor requires a content description to be created. So previously, and that's just a massive shift from remembering to add the content description. You know, in the old XML-based system, you'd get a little warning. And if you were good, you would heed that warning, but 95% of us weren't good all the time. And in Compose world, I think it's a much better story because it is required to create the thing. You'd have to make a choice to, say, provide an empty string or something to really not do it. So I think that's a big win.
There's also ones, like, it seems small, but at the same time, it's a huge win. It was a bit of a breaking change, and at the time I was kind of annoyed by this, but what the team did at Google was they defined minimum sizes for any kind of actionable UI components. So, for example, there's a general accessibility guideline that all elements which are, let's say, clickable, interactable, you know, anything that you can select, focus, maybe even type something in, so on and so forth, has to be at least like 36 or 48 points on Android in size. So on XML, you could just clearly ignore that, obviously. Like, you can put in any size that you want. However, on Compose, you could do that up to a point, and then, excuse me, and then a team went and said, okay, well, all of the buttons, all of the UI components that you can interact with have a minimum of 48 dp in size. So you can kind of manipulate this a bit, where you can maybe add some padding to the component so that the visual looks are smaller, but it's still equally clickable in terms of size. But you can't really say, okay, here's my small button, which is only 5 points in size. So if you don't really see it, you can't use it. You know, like a small X that dismisses a paywall or some sort of promotion that you're running, like an ad or something like that. Now you have to make those components visible, clickable enough, otherwise the system will kind of override you. So that's like a small win, and it's pretty nice. Some other things that they added which helps with accessibility are semantics. So you can add a lot of different semantics to your components. You can add some, you know, alternate text, you can add some, essentially anything that you can see when a user runs accessibility tools, which helps them use the app. So it's a bit easier, I think, to do in Compose, because you can just change them as modifiers. Whereas in XML, that you had like different attributes, different components, different properties that you can add to a specific view. And, you know, you could remember one or two, but in Compose, what you can do is you can create like your custom modifier, which applies a bunch of semantics for a general component, like a button or like an input field. So it's easier. I don't know like how far they went with accessibility support and how many things you can do, but it's just easier to apply.
Have you tried to run the screen reader while you're building Jetpack Compose apps and kind of seeing what the end result is? Yeah. I haven't either, but that would be very interesting.
Yeah, I think I haven't so far.
Because it's kind of a mess.
I got to do it because I was a final pass editor on Accessibility by Tutorials written by Victoria Gonda. And it is a really good experience that I think all developers or people learning Android should have, is just blindfold yourself or close your eyes and try to use your phone. Because it's really, if you've never done that before, it's shocking. It kind of puts you in the situation of how important it is to include content description and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've done some accessibility testing in the old XML world, and it is eye-opening when you first turn it on, go through an app, and hear just gibberish. And you very quickly you realize, like, okay, this is not usable. This is an impossible-to-use app. And then when you start to use, you know, Facebook or the bigger apps for players that actually put in the effort to make accessibility good, it's a dramatic difference.
I have a obviously I'm over on the iOS world, but I have a segmented button that has three choices, and then I have the title of the button above it, which looks and seems okay, but then I do that in accessibility mode and it makes no sense, because it's just reading the names off the segments and it's not actually giving you any sense of context. So yeah, accessibility is something we should all be striving better for. Philippe, I'm going to turn to you on the next one, because we've covered testing, we've covered accessibility. So let's talk about animation.
What do you want?
How is animation in Jetpack Compose?
Okay. Some of the basic things that we had in XML as well function very similarly, but to me just look a bit more intuitive. In XML we have these view property animators and just like, you know, animators that change different values from one range to another, like between different values, and you would have to apply them to your UI components. The issue with those in XML was that if you forgot to like start your animations, if you forget to like cancel them or something like that, you can end up with very weird UI, very weird state. Now in Compose, all animations are similarly applied to the properties of a component. So for example, if you're trying to change the color or the size, you have to put that into the respective modifier. But here's the thing, you can't really forget to put it because it's declarative. So if you don't define an animation for, let's say, the view size, then obviously nothing happens. Now in just generally retrospect, that's much simpler and much more intuitive to me. Because in XML, you know, you can create the whole animation, you can pretty much build everything, but just not start it and it doesn't work. Here, you know, if you're building an animation, if you're building the component, then you just apply it to the component and it works out of the box. There's a few different ways you can also do animations. You have like obviously the general, you know, linear and different kinds of mathematic equations that are applied to the animations, interpolators. You can change them very easily. But the main part which I really like is that anytime you want to animate something, you just check the state of what you're trying to do. You make a small if check or maybe like a when clause, a switch or something like that, and you just put it into the component and it works. Animations are run every single composition, unless you want to like not have that happen. You can do some manual work. But generally, you get updates every single time some state changes, and it works out of the box.
Alex, do you want to add anything?
Sure, yeah. I also think that animations in Jetpack Compose are great. I think that the old animation system is so fragmented. There's so many different ways to do different things, and they don't talk to each other. The systems don't talk to each other very well, or they do a little bit, but it's not a super happy story. So I think Jetpack Compose has been a huge improvement. I think that the animation APIs that I've used seem to stitch together much more harmoniously and thoughtfully. The one thing I'll say is that I've done a lot of reactive programming, a lot of declarative UI stuff. For some reason, for the way my brain works, animations have been one of the few imperative sticking points I have in my head. I think that... especially like firing off an animation, starting an animation, to me, conceptually, does make a little bit more sense in the imperative world, where you're usually saying, somebody click this button, and then you say, okay, great, view.animate whatever, or write this monstrosity of a transition animation, whatever it is. Whereas in Jetpack Compose world, since it's less imperative, you need to set things up before you're doing it, which for some reason, with my brain, animations are just the one spot where each time I'm like, wait a minute, how do I... What would this look like? But I want to do this here. What do I do now? So that's been my one challenge, is kind of getting into declarative thinking for animations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does, like, when you're using it, when coming from imperative world, it looks a bit magical. You know, it just kind of happens. And, you know, as you said, like, you click a button, you change its state, you know, maybe an enum case. And then the button itself, as you're defining the animation, knows how to animate. Like, you can define it. It's color changing, it's, you know, corner radius, maybe even if it's enabled or disabled. And you can define all of that up front, and it just kind of works. You know, it's a bit weird. Yeah, I definitely admit that. But for me, you know, when you start using it a bit more, then it just kind of becomes something that you do on a regular basis.
Wonderful. Philippe, you gave a talk at AppDevCon about building deeply customizable UI components using Jetpack Compose slots. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. So a few years back, I was at a company where we were building a chat SDK with Compose. Nothing like that really existed at the time, so it was one of the first libraries, open source libraries, that you can use to build a full chat solution. When I say that, I mean, you know, a list of communication channels. It can be like groups, it can be any sort of workspaces that you organize. So you can think Slack, Instagram, or any social media app. And then when you select a specific item, then you open up the group message where you can just see a lot of different messages, different message types, like attachments, so on and so forth. So the challenge with that was that since it's an open source library, it had to be super customizable. You know, users had to be able to change absolutely everything from where your timestamp is positioned to do you even want to have a timestamp, to the border, the corner radius of your message bubbles, if you even want message bubbles, so on and so forth. So if you look at like chat in general, for me, it's one of the most complex UI solutions, because pretty much anything can be customizable and different from one client to another. Now just look at, you know, Slack versus Discord versus Telegram or any other app. The talk that I gave was just a general direction and approach we took when developing this solution. And it uses this concept called slots in Jetpack Compose. So a slot is just a lambda function that you pass from one Jetpack Compose component to another. And it can be another composable. So for example, in this Zoom meeting that we're currently in, let's say that each of the portraits that we have, each video feed is one slot. And you can, for example, exchange what my slot does. So you can maybe shrink my slot and add some chat to decide which is my transcription of what I'm saying, you know, things like that. So essentially, this is a system that we developed. And the idea is that every single thing on the UI is a slot. And in that sense, you can say, okay, I want to change this one particular thing, or I want to completely remove some other components from the UI. So my talk was about that and just like some general best approaches, especially for someone who's building something that's open source, something that's going to be used by other developers.
Wonderful.
That's
I hope that was well received.
I think so. Yeah, I had a lot of questions because, people were also doing similar things, and Compose was at least new at the time. So a lot of people were running into the same issue, and some of the things that we did and some of the things that we learned at the time just helped others, you know, build their own applications and make them much more reusable and customizable in the future.
I wish we had time to play the entire interview, but if you'd like to see the interview with all the material, watch YouTube for the full video version.
Folks, I cannot thank you enough for this. As I've said, I'm an Apple guy, so I feel like a mental moron on this. And I was able to keep track of everything today. It really helped. And Jen, thank you so much for being my technical backup and my ace in the hole, who has done more editing on more of our books and lessons than I can possibly count. But Philippe, Alex, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
We've got so many shows coming up in the pipeline in the next few weeks. We're going to be doing some stuff on what it's like to be a freelance versus somebody in corporate. We are going to take this same path of finding out the transition between UIKit and Swift UI. We're going to talk about some of the favorite apps that mobile developers have. So we've got a lot coming up in the pipeline. We hope you'll stay with us over these next few episodes. We always appreciate your listenership. And, of course, we appreciate it when you leave a positive feedback in your podcast app of choice. But until our next episode, thank you very much. I have been and continue being True Freeman. Have a great evening, afternoon, morning, or whatever it is that you listen to your podcast. Thanks so much, everyone.
And that's a wrap. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to the Codeco podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget to leave a rating in your favorite podcast app. See you next time.